Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff and we're delighted to have you with us today. And we have a very interesting show lined up for you to do today called Strengthening the Mind-Body Connection. And our guest today will be with us in just a moment. And before we bring her on, I wanted to introduce my co-host. This is Robin Martinez from Denver. Hi, Robin. How are you doing?
Hi, Joyce. Doing great here. It's a beautiful day.
Great. So you're looking at mountains, and I'm looking at ocean, and we hope that everybody has pretty things outside their windows, too. So I'd like to welcome Dr. Allison J. Kay, who's going to talk with us about the mind-body connection. Welcome, Dr. Kay.
Hi there.
Hi. So glad to have you with us today.
So, thank you.
So your promo is talking about the melding of Asian and Western philosophies and medical cultures. And that's something that I've been interested in for a long time myself. So in Western culture, we talk about sort of the technical approach. And in Asian culture, what are the differences that you see between the Western and the Asian medical cultures?
Oh, wow. That's such a huge question. And I'm glad to hear you're interested in it because it is so timely right now in particular. One of the main differences that I talk about in my book, What If There's Nothing Wrong, is the sense of what gets used as information for the symptoms. So, Joyce, it's like the idea of going into the doctors and here in the States, I don't even know what that's like because I haven't done so in so long. Let me come out of that. Let's give an example of if we go to a doctor in India or in Taiwan, for example, many of them are Western-trained doctors. In fact, the majority of Ayurvedic medical doctors in India, trained as also Western MDs, is quite high, and it's also very typical in Taiwan, too. So I could go to an acupuncturist, for example, in Taiwan, who isn't a Western-trained doctor, and give them a complaint of a sore tummy, and what they could look at is then my complexion. They would ask me questions about the levels of stress in my life. They would ask me what I'd been eating. So let's say I went for knee pain, they'd still ask me what I'd been eating. They would ask me about, they would be examining my countenance to look for signs of emotions of any kind. They would feel my pulse, 3 different levels of depth of pulse. So it's not just the circulatory system, it's also a sense of energetic circulation, which is telling about the mind-body-spirit connection. So there is a host of symptoms that what we frequently in the West, just particularly in America, tend to separate out from the bodily reactions. They actually include in their symptom list and diagnosis.
Right. So in addition to, as you say, the Western diagnosis, the normal things that we're accustomed to, they take your temperature, they take your blood pressure and things like that. But they might look at your tongue, for example. So in Eastern medicine, there's usually a lot of inspection of the tongue, the color, the coating on it, even the shape of it and so forth. And a lot of the diagnosis is around the tongue, right?
Well, I don't want to... It's really been an interesting discovery process in that how in America, in the West, we get presented the quote-unquote Asian practices because they give us the kind of impression, for example, that you're talking about, that the tongue is very important. And so if we went to somebody for reflexology, and that was our entry into traditional Chinese medicine, we would be under the impression that they pay a lot of attention to the feet. So the tongue is looked at in both Ayurvedic and traditional Chinese medicine, but it's only one of the many things, including the pulse and the countenance and the color of your complexion and the food you've been eating and the levels of stress, that is a part of a long list of what's looked at in getting information. So you may have a distorted sense of the importance given to the tongue. It's just so different than what we're used to having looked at that it ends up getting paid more attention to, I think, in its presentation, typically to a Western and specifically American audience. Does that help?
Yes, it does. And I think the point I was just trying to make, not that the tongue specifically is so important, but that it there's a different set of things that are looked at by a doctor in Chinese culture, the Asian culture, I should say, because it's not all Chinese. But they look at a number of different things, which are, in fact, good indicators, but just are not at the top of the list in Western medicine. So when was the last time your doctor really looked at your tongue is one example. And we tend to sort of bypass that and worry more about the numbers, the levels of blood pressure, the levels of different elements in the blood. And those are, of course, important, but they're not the only measures of whether or not this body is humming along in good order.
And Joyce, another important element of what you're talking about right there, I go into too in my book, What If There's Nothing Wrong, in talking about how, so what you just described were numbers from tests that are given to measure certain indicators of robust health or necessary for medication as our system sees it. And so one of the interesting pieces of research I came up with when I was writing What If There's Nothing Wrong in my last of my 10 years living in Asia was from two Dartmouth medical professors who wrote the book Green Medicine. And in it, one of them is talking about how so many times the threshold of what is the warning level of blood pressure and cholesterol, and then what are the levels to medicate at, had changed since his 14 years of being out of med school, that he consistently had to consult the manual, ultimately saying that once, at one point when these levels were of no importance and no concern, they'd now become the warning. And then the levels that were once the warning had then become the levels to medicate at. So what he said is that ultimately we ended up medicating a million new people. So these, it's not just that point that I want to make. Yeah, it's also, I have like 80 and 90-year-old clients. I have clients of all ages, all age ranges. But when I hear reports from the elders of what their experiences are with their doctors, a lot of the time it seems like there's this automatic age that gets hit and automatically tests get activated. And then automatically, and sometimes automatically the medication gets given. So there's like no individual level of protocol in our system. In the holistic system, what I found really interesting in both the Ayurvedic system from my yoga teacher training in India and then also the different traditional Chinese medical protocols like acupuncture and Taoist herbalism and reflexology and medical Qigong even, were they looked at an individual and the individual's level. So it wasn't this one treatment fits all kind of universally applied treatment like a medication as it is here in the States. They look at a person's changes within their own individual system and what that meant. So if somebody went, if four people went in with gastrointestinal upsets, each one, depending on their individual list of symptoms and their individual history with this part of their body and mind system, they would get a different protocol to then walk away with and implement, unlike here.
So here it's
thank you. Go ahead, Robin.
So here it's more, in the West, it's more symptom treatment rather than whole person treatment.
Yeah, it's not as, what you're getting from that. What's your name, please? Is this Robin?
Robin, yes.
Hi, Robin.
Hi.
what it seems like is it's more, yes, it's what you just said. There's less individualized assessment and then application of protocol. Is less individualized here. It's more of a universal treatment.
Then it becomes really dangerous that a patient just becomes a collection of symptoms. So for symptom A, you're taking medication A, and for symptom B, you're taking medication B, and for symptom C, you're taking medication C. And sometimes those medications don't really play that well together, but the doctor may not be realizing the conflicts between them.
Yeah, absolutely.
You may have six doctors involved in your treatments. Yes. Women have an gynecologist. Pregnant women are even more involved with the gynecologist. You go see people for imaging. You go see people for allergies. You see people for aging. You see people for diabetes. And all these different conditions require you to be divided up into symptoms.
Yeah, and that's actually an interesting response. When I first came back, with all of my different degrees and credentials, I had met a person at the first expo, the Mind Body Spirit Expo, actually, that I spoke at. And I went to an integrative physician I met speaking there. And he was more an MD and ran less of an integrative clinic, but he liked to call it a Mind Body Spirit clinic. And I was talking with him, and he said, looking at my list of credentials, that there's the yoga teacher, there's the holistic life coach, PhD, the energy medicine practitioner, the personal trainer, the specialty certificate in fitness nutrition, the Qigong teacher. The meditation teacher of 23 years. He didn't understand how that all fit together, and what he ended up telling me is you have to specialize. And I looked at him. This is my very first interaction with a professional upon my return for professional alignment. And I looked at him and I said, but that's the whole point. It's not about specialty. It's about a holisticness of the mind, the body, and the spirit all combining together to create a person. And of course, we didn't end up working together, but he gave me a really interesting piece of feedback. And at that time, it was 5 years ago when I first came back from a decade in Asia. And we weren't as a country ready for that kind of approach. And I'm seeing more and more signs of more and more people actually now starting to pick up my book, because I think it seems like it was so ahead of what people were ready to receive. But at this point, now I'm seeing, like, we just heard the AMA come out last year with the admission that at least 50% of all physical issues have some birthing in an emotional state, or that emotions cause. Yeah, and that was that. I mean, 50% is not what somebody in my field says about the level of cause that the emotions have in any kind of physical outcome that then gets treated in Western medicine. But still, they're starting to get that, which is interesting.
Right, yeah, and we're also starting to look at how much pain, for example, is related to your mind and what your mind is perceiving, rather than just what the body is sending you. So that you might be getting a signal that if you're distracted, you wouldn't even notice the pain. But if you're focused on how do I feel, what's going on, oh, my foot hurts, or whatever, then that pain is going to take over your life.
Is that Joyce or Robin?
Robin.
That was Robin. Go ahead.
Robin, that's such an excellent point. The amount of pages in my book that I spend discussing how you and I, Robin and Joyce, the three of us could be in traffic, and I could be driving along bumper to bumper and happy because it's giving me the hour I need to give myself a self-treatment of the energy medicine I do. And so I'm grateful for that time every day, driving into work. You, on the other hand, next to me, you could be completely frustrated because you're late and you need to get to a meeting. You have a lot of work to do that day. And then Joyce, on the other hand, could be have just received a CD that her grandkids recorded singing to grandma. And so each of us has our own perception of that traffic, therefore. And I wouldn't, and nor would Joyce, have turned. Sorry, Robin, I don't mean to pick on you. You just feel like you can hear me.
I'll be the angry guy.
Say again. Say again, Robin. What?
I said I'll be the angry driver. That's okay.
okay. So you would have the stress response cascaded in your your body. You would have the biochemical reaction, whereas both Joyce and I wouldn't have. And so, yes, it's exactly what you're talking about. It is our mind that perceives any and all quote-unquote external event and then frames it, and then we have our bodily, hormonal, and chemical and electrical throughout our central nervous system messaging so that we are each at the, I want to say, mercy of our minds, which is why primarily I approach all of my work through the mental perceptions and then undoing the beliefs that are usually at a hidden level, at the subconscious or unconscious level behind something at work in our lives that we don't want. And so by undoing these subconscious and unconscious beliefs, a different messaging happens throughout the body and then a different energetics happens throughout the body and it frees stuff up. It's a lot more technical than that. I have a whole system that's developed as a roadmap to understand what parts of the body have a correspondence to what set of beliefs about what quadrant of life. But it's in a simplified way, yes, in fact, everything comes down to our thoughts and beliefs.
Yes, and like recovery from surgery, if somebody goes into surgery fearful and thinking, oh, this is going to be so hard and it's a terrible surgery and it's going to be a hard recovery, they're likely to have a hard recovery. Whereas if you go in thinking, I've got a great surgeon, this is going to be easy, I'm going to have a terrific recovery, I'm looking forward to being in the hospital for a few days, it's like a vacation, and then I go home, everything's going to be wonderful, that person is likely to have a very easy recovery.
They've actually done some studies on with heart patients that some people went into surgery with really no preparation and just their own anxiety or their own feelings about what was ahead of them, some of which was pretty dire, I have to say. And then another group of patients where they brought them in, they explained what the surgery was about, and not only brought in the patient, but brought in the patient's family so that there was this sort of group experience talking about what the surgery was going to entail, what the recovery period was going to be like, what support that people were going to need to get through that. And just with that difference, just talking, the people who had that preparation did twice as well as the other people did. So there's a lot too. Our minds control more than we realize. And if we go into things with positive feelings and a sense that we're going to succeed, we're much more likely to succeed. If we go in thinking that, oh, this is terrible and I'm likely to die, you're much more likely to die. So,
yeah.
So our minds control more than we realize. And I think that's one of the major differences between the Western medicine approach, which is highly technical, and the Eastern medical approach, which tends to be much more cerebral, if you will. But people sometimes look at Eastern medicine and say, oh, well, it's like a religion, and I have my own religion, so I don't want to do that. So can you position for us what Eastern medicine is and isn't? It's not a religion, but it is a way of using your thoughts to help control your body. Help us out with that.
Well, it's interesting, Joyce. Even when you said the Eastern culture is more cerebral, it's still showing me from, and this might seem like I'm nitpicking, but I'm not. It's to help illustrate the answer.
Sure.
Having lived there, contextualized, thank you, for the 10 years in Asia, the mind is construed as an entirely different beast, and I write about this profusely in What If There's Nothing Wrong, my first book, and I'm still writing about it in my second book. And in fact, every week when I teach my yoga and meditation class, I'm still guiding folks in how to come off of the mind and back to the breath and growing the musculature to detach from their thinking mind. So it's not that the East are more cerebral, because cerebral still indicates the intellect. It's the absolute, I'm going to get radical here, disregard for our thoughts. In the understanding, one of the basic Buddhist premises is that every human mind is a neurotic mind. And the tools are presented for Buddhist meditation, and meditation is taken out by Buddha the yogic practices that were originally established in India and then got carried throughout Asia. So here we are with Buddhism, and it's the extrapolated practice of meditation out of the yoga and meditation coupling that was originally and is part of the overall yogic path. So in, for example, the yogic path in India, it was originally designed to have the eight limbs of yoga, that's the Ashtanga tradition that I'm trained in. And five of the eight limbs are about working with the mind. Only one of those eight limbs is about the body. So there's an understanding that all of the tools brought forth in Buddhist meditation and the majority of tools in the yogic tradition are to work with the mind, ultimately cultivating a detachment from our thinking mind so that we have the ability to redirect after any thought that we observe that causes, that could potentially cause discomfort, doesn't even get to the point of our believing in it enough for it to cause any kind of discomfort. And not to be afraid of any of the thoughts that we have, but to become more of a witness. And one of my teachers, I love, he says, fire the judge, hire the witness. So if you were to just, it's great.
That's good.
Yeah, I mean, we just as one example, if, for example, your knee hurts, you can focus on that knee and say, you know, how bad is this? This is awful. I can't live with it, blah, blah, blah. Maybe I need an aspirin. And you just focus on the negative part of it. It will take over. It becomes bigger and bigger.
Yep.
But if you just, consider it and dismiss it, maybe you can put us through some little way of considering pain that would dismiss the pain.
Okay, so let's do this. Let me blast you with this. When I was working with, I'm going to say it, I don't normally talk about this on interviews, but my mother got diagnosed with a brain tumor while I was over in Asia, and I resigned from my position and came back to use my energy medicine on the diagnosis that she was given, which was 3 months to live. I used that energy medicine on that brain every day, and the first thing I had to do realistically when I got back here was back my family off with their fearful thinking that they were projecting into my mom's world and tell them to stay away, please, and not come over the house and not call until they could get their fear under wraps. And I proceeded to then work with my mother daily. Gradually, we got the brain tumor erased from her brain, dumped the local team of oncologists here who met looking at her MRI without the brain tumor in it. And the doctor, ironically from India, trained in Western medicine, stood there in the office saying, whatever you're doing, keep doing it, as it was decreasing. I'm saying all of this because what I was doing during the time was I was activating with the energy medicine, because the energy, the chi, the life force, the prana, however you refer to it, has its own innate intelligence. I was activating it to take on the roles, yeah, of the surrounding, the cells that were damaged from where the brain tumor sat. I was activating the surrounding brain cells to take over the task, to help. And so a year later, came out the scientific papers terming what I had been doing neuroplasticity. It had no connection to me. It was a separate discovery. And the point being is that our cells are alive. Our body is alive. Western medicine, because in the West, we are not taught about energy. The entire East lives from the backdrop of the understanding of qi, which is the Chinese way of saying it, qi, which is the Japanese way of saying it, prana, which is the Indian way of saying it. All of the cultures understand that the energy flows throughout our universe and flows throughout our bodies. And so in the West, we don't live from that backdrop, so we don't have an understanding of how alive everything is. So we make things much more solid and much more real, and therefore we end up with a sore knee, and we think that's it. It's the end. It's never going to change. We have medication. We have surgeries. Everything's static and stasis, and solid and real and enduring, comparative to the way East lives, with an understanding at their backdrop of energy changes. Energy is constantly moving. So the number one thing you could do is understand that. And then we can talk about working with your belief. Because what's being discovered on the cutting edges right now of the new science are things like we're regenerating new cells for the gums. We're regenerating. I just listened to a colleague the other day talk about a colon had been, this is going to sound crazy, but a colon had been removed surgically, and the person had grown it back. I heard another colleague two years ago, talk about a little boy who didn't know that growing back arms wasn't possible, who had lost his arm in an accident, saw a lizard grow its tail back and thought he could do the same thing with his arm and was able to. And that's documented by medical research. So, yeah, so there's this element of regeneration.
We turn these, in Western medicine, we turn these into anecdotes. And, that's interesting, but no one else can do it. Whereas you really can. I found when I get a headache, which is fairly rare, that what I do, rather than thinking, my head hurts, I need to go take some ibuprofen or something like that, I think, where is the pain in my head? And let's move the thinking over to a different area in the head. And I feel like I just sort of walk from the area that's hurting to a different area that's not hurting and locate my thinking there, and the pain goes away.
So what you're talking about is one of the key tips that I can give you, as you're asking for tips to help the audience shift easier and quicker, is the idea that what if we, combining what I just said and what you just said, what if the idea that we are much more porous, like sponges, as opposed to like solid, my arms end where my arms end and your arms begin where your arms begin, and we can reach our hands out to touch each other, but other than that, we're not touching. What if, because of the way energy is and because of the way our spirits, the eternal parts of ourselves, surround and fit within our physical bodies, makes us a lot more porous and a lot more connected, as quantum physics has pointed out, than we are led to believe by our mainstream paradigm? And therefore, what if... Okay, let me back up a second. Have you noticed that when you're thinking of somebody, all of a sudden you get a text from them? Have you guys seen that happen?
Yeah.
Okay. So the nature of the times we're living in have become increasingly that way, where it's called this is considered the biggest leap evolutionarily in humankind ever, and we're moving into humanity's spiritual awakening. And so what's happening is more of that connectivity recognized, and that connectivity is also supported by the science of quantum physics. So those things all considered, what we could do, when one of your listeners, if you have pain come in or a negative thought come in, you could just simply ask, is this even mine? And then you don't have to say where is this coming from, and then research it. You could just say, is this mine? As an effort, like I believe it was Robin saying, she just relocates the pain so that it just dissipates, and then watch it just like fly in and fly out. Stop making everything so solid and real, including your thoughts, interpreting an event. Because what if it wasn't the way your mind was saying it was? And it's only your conditioning growing up in America that you have the thoughts that you have anyway. And what if your thoughts, if you grew up on the opposite side of the planet, would be totally different? So how real does that make your thoughts anyway? Don't believe your thoughts.
Right.
Yeah, they sometimes lie to you. But I think that it's another argument for not wallowing in your sadness about it, because there's a certain amount of, the more you focus it negative, the more negative it becomes. It just gets more and more real in that way. Whereas if you just say, that's interesting, that sort of hurts a little bit, and you just sort of kiss it goodbye, it floats off like a butterfly into the ether. It doesn't have to stay with you.
No, it doesn't. And all of the things I've already said, what you just said, it doesn't have to stay with you. Yes, but another aspect that you're talking about, you're bringing it up again, and I want to speak to it because it's so important. There is a sense of momentum that gets built depending on what you focus on. So if you're all of a sudden looking at buying a Mini Cooper because you need a new car, and it's a yellow Mini Cooper, you know how all of a sudden you start seeing yellow Mini Coopers everywhere? Or
it's
whatever
true.
New car.
That's right.
That's our focus. That's our perception.
And then all of a sudden you realize that maybe you could do with a Honda instead, and suddenly you get opportunities for Hondas.
This has been great fun. We're down to the last 1 minute of the show. So do you want to leave a particular message with our listeners to sum up this conversation? This has been great, Allison. Thank you.
Oh, it's been my honor. I'd love to give them my website, and if you guys want free stuff, there's stuff available on the website. And the way to really enter into the reprogramming of your thoughts is the Tuesday night call, the Tuesday night group call. So when you get to my website, it's my name, ALISONJKAY.com. Look up services and then look up group call. That's the cheapest way to get access to working with me, get your own thoughts reprogrammed. And so that's the bottom line, is don't believe your thoughts.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And I will put that into the description for the show as well. So it's Alice and Jake K, and I don't want to mess up the rest of it, /services group call, and look for it in the description so that I be sure to get it correct. And thank you very much, Allison, for being with us today. Thanks, Robin, as always. Stimulating discussion, lots of fun, and thank you, everybody, for being with us. We hope you'll be with us again next week, and meanwhile, be well and be a powerful patient. Take good care.
Thank you.